City's News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew, along with Sam. Let's start off here before we get back to Trump derangement syndrome.
Okay.
Stories out of Metro.com. Sam?
Yes?
Any cows on your farm?
I don't.
No cows on
I
your farm,
but
huh?
I do want to get some mini cows.
Yeah?
You oh, mini cows?
No.
Why not?
I don't know, I guess you guys don't got time for cows. I don't know. Cows are kind of the kind of animals I guess you can just kind of kick out to pasture for a while.
Yeah, and take care of themselves.
I mean, sort of.
Apparently, cows are good for cuddling.
Okay.
That is the next.
I can get on board with that.
Apparently, according to this article, there's nothing more restorative than a good cuddle. I agree with that. Right? Like me a good cuddle.
And a face massage.
Right? Face massage as well. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, according to the article, hippies hugging trees to connect to Earth or people paying for hugging therapy. We've heard about those places now where you can go and you can just have a cuddle party.
Yep. Cuddle therapy.
Sometimes we just need a little physical contact. Even if it's you just rubbing your face.
Rubbing your own face,
right? How about cuddling with a cow? Right? The mountain horse.
That cuddly. Like they're hard.
I think any animal could be cuddly.
Yeah.
Get cuddly.
I cuddle with Bella.
Yeah, well, I'm saying.
I try to cuddle with Bella.
A dog would be much better.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I try to cuddle with Bella, she gets all excited and starts trying to lick me.
So this article specifically singles out cows?
Yeah. There's a mountain horse farm in upstate New York, and it's offering a horse and cow experience.
I need to get some cows.
It promises to give farm animal enthusiasts a chance to bring relaxation, healing, and awareness about their body language via cow cuddling.
Okay.
Also promotes comfort, mindfulness, builds assertiveness, helps with overcoming fear, builds confidence, lets you be playful, and teaches you to set boundaries. The farm claims that cows are genuinely great cuddle buddies thanks to their sensitive nature.
Of course, that farm's going to claim it.
You know what else they are? It's tasty.
Yeah.
You can cuddle with your meal.
I'm going to eat you later.
So that's interesting that it's single. So.
You cuddle and I'm going to make a burger out of you.
In order to survive in the wild, they had to become masters at reading body language, the farm claims. So when you enter their...
Yes, cows are just masters at it, I'm sure.
When you enter their space, they will read you subtly, but with intent, just like they would read any other herd member.
Yeah.
They will pick up on what's going on inside, sense if you're happy, sad, lost, anxious, or excited, and they will respond to that without judgment, ego, or agenda.
So this article could easily, first of all, be written about any animal. But also, I mean, horses in particular. Well, tigers will read your body language, yeah. I mean, they're
ducks.
Not as cuddly.
Yeah, I don't even
ducks, know. Yeah, I've got ducks. They definitely read my body language, I think, and try to steal food out of my hands. But that's not the point. Horses, I mean, you look at equine therapy, that is such a legitimate and... I don't know. I mean, useful therapy tool is horses. And I feel like everything you just said could easily be applied to horses. Also, I mean, dogs and cats. Maybe not cats. Cats don't really care.
Bunnies, Drew?
No, bunnies don't
care. Cuddle bunny?
Nah, bunny don't care.
Buttons doesn't read your reading your body
language.
Nah,
Buttons has her own agenda at all times. It's all about, you know, getting that parsley.
Much like her master.
Used?
Yeah, pretty much. Every pair of my jeans has holes in the bottom of it.
Because of
Buttons.
I have this firm belief that Buttons is just out to eat the pants off of everyone.
To eat the pants off of you.
She will, if you don't move, she will just continuously eat your pants.
Yeah, she will come up to you and she'll just start gnawing on your pants.
Yeah. I think she's a messed up bunny.
Apparently cuddling.
She's a pervert.
Yeah.
Is what she is.
Yeah,
cuddling
a tiny,
up,
adorable
tiny
pervert.
Little fluffy pervert.
Cuddling up with a cow, right? Feeling that lower heart rate and higher body temperature is very relaxing, they say. I guess, again, it all says cows have a body temperature that's slightly higher than humans, and their heart rate is lower than ours. So a 90-minute session.
Of horses.
90-minute session, Sam? How much do you think it would cost? 90 minutes
to cuddle
with a cow.
I'm sure that they're billing this as some kind of like therapy or whatever. It's probably over $100.
Well, let me give you all the parameters, and then you can guess. Okay?
Okay,
so it's a 90-minute session.
Okay,
two people, during which time you can pet, brush, and cuddle the cows, and there'll also will be a licensed counselor present. So two people,
licensed 90, with what?
90-minute cuddle session. You can pet, brush, cuddle when the professional there. How much? for two people?
Oh, What would I charge?
Okay, I'm sorry. How much are they charging? And then you can let us know how much you would charge.
They're charging at least $200. I'll go as far as to say $250.
$300.
$300.
$300. You were so close.
So you get to cuddle, like John said, cuddle, pet, brush the cows, and a licensed counselor. Like, what do you got to get a license in? What government board is like, right. I don't know, you haven't really met all the requirements of standing next to a cow.
You know what you could do? You could just go to like a pasture where there's a cow. And just
they're not hard to find.
Don't advocate trespassing.
Oh, yeah.
Or walk up to a farmer and just say, hey, can I pet your cows? And they'll be like, yeah, I don't care. We're going to make them into burgers anyway.
I'm kind of creating a hashtag me too cow movement.
Hashtag me cow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize. I shouldn't be advocating for cuddling with random cows.
On the
equine therapy is a legitimate business model. There are equine therapeutic centers that like therapists and counselors actually will send their patients to. So that's a legitimate thing. And I mean, it makes sense. It seems like cows are, I mean, they're a lot like horses, except they're probably even less reactive than they are. They probably move less. So.
I wonder if Delta would let one on a plane.
Probs not.
There are genetic studies that link, you know, cows to horses, right? You know, they're the hooved animals.
Yep.
But they also say that they're closely related to cows are more closely related to like whales.
What?
And
you know, I actually remember learning about that in biology. There's some weird biological reasons for that.
Whales, dolphins, and porpoises are closely related to hoofed mammals with an even number of toes. That includes pigs, hippos, camels, cows, deer, giraffes, and sheep.
Yeah, they have split hooves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, well, you know, whales and porpoises and dolphins are mammals. Mm-hmm. They're not fish.
Stupid fish.
So I guess when they evolved and they came up on land, they turned into pigs and camels.
All right.
And cows.
All right, if you're into that kind of thing. All right.
Next time you're eating a burger, thank a whale.
Thanks, whales. Delicious steak.
What has happened?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You brought up cows.
I didn't mean to take it that far. I just thought it was an amusing anecdote. That was all. I just thought it was a nice little story we could talk about. Let's go here.
Okay.
Pioneer Press. 2015 Teacher of the Year from St. Paul Schools lost her spot on a new teacher licensing board because she insulted President Donald Trump using a raw expletive, in a social media post. She wrote this January 12th Facebook post. You ready? This was Amy Hewitt Olatunde. Amy Hewitt Olatunde said this: "He is not worthy, nor are his puppet masters, of human dignity. He is the blank hole, and we should line up and take a blank on him."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's not, that's gross.
The comment was attached to a news article about remarks attributed to Trump earlier this year, which he questioned why the U.S. would accept more immigrants from Haiti and other blank hole countries in Africa. State senator from Park Rapids read the post on the Senate floor this past weekend as Hewitt Olatunde's nomination for the spot of Professional Education Licensing and Standards Board was considered. "That's the kind of stuff that really bothered me," they said, supporting a motion by a colleague not to confirm Hewitt Olatunde. The Hewitt Olatunde said Tuesday that Trump's comments have had a painful impact on the students that she works with, all of which are immigrants and English learners. She said she felt the need to publicly reject the president's comments. "I stand behind everything I posted on Facebook."
Okay, and it costs you a spot on this board.
Right?
All right, that's fine.
It's fine.
You know what? Those on the left like to say it all the time. You know, your speech does not come without consequences. Every time they decide to boycott, you know, some company that might have supported or aligned with a conservative in some way, you know, that you have the right to free speech, but it does not come without consequences. And if you're going to go up in front of a bunch of Republicans and ask them to confirm in a nomination onto a government board, and you have publicly gone out there on Facebook and said things like that, well, you might have a tough time.
Yeah.
those are the consequences of your free speech.
I give props for, you know, for standing by your comments and accepting the fact that you are going to lose out on opportunities mm-hmm. when you go and make such comments. By the way, on Twitter, using the hashtag TCNT.
Those weren't the only comments that she made, by the way.
Yeah, no, there was a
There were a lot of other things. I remember reading something, you know, when this was going on, where she had posted something to the effect of, "If you are a Republican, if you support this president, unfriend me now. I don't want to be associated with you by any stretch." Okay, yeah, that's fine. Okay, you feel that way. Now you want to serve on the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. What if somebody comes to that board who happens to be a Republican?
Right.
And now suddenly your decision is going to impact their career. You've clearly shown that you cannot be objective when dealing with Republicans if you've publicly stated that you can't even be friends with them. They are not even worthy of your friendship, if they're Republican, then are they going to be worthy of your consideration when they are appearing in front of this board that you want to be a part of? Probably not. And that's a fair question to ask.
I wonder where they were at over the weekend. They were at Union having lunch or a cup of water in their hands. 651-989-5855. We got a couple of tweets, Drew, using the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. Eric in Chicago, going back to the cuddle with the cows, says, shouldn't that be hashtag meat too? It's funny. Hashtag licensed counselor. Get it? Because cow?
Yeah. It's a pun.
Yeah, it's funny. That's right.
I get it.
LA Times has an update on a story that we covered yesterday. Stormy Daniels Day went off without a hitch. The porn star walked out of a hot pink sex toy shop, enveloped by security guards who waded into a sea of camera operators so thick they could hardly move. "Stormy, to your left," they shouted. "You're right, Stormy, Stormy." It was Stormy Daniels Day in West Hollywood. And the adult film actress had an event with city leaders in front of the black backdrop.
How proud must the residents of this city be?
Oh, they are. It's bizarro land in West Hollywood.
So weird.
In front of a black backdrop with the city logo and the hashtag resist spelled out in hot pink, Mayor Pro Tem John DeMonico.
Well, the whole point is she didn't resist.
Oh, that's true. That's a really good point. Yeah. She didn't resist.
She did not resist.
No.
No, she was like, thumbs up.
She hashtag succumb.
I mean, Donald Trump made advances.
Apparently.
And she accepted them.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
According to her, there was no resisting.
No, this was all consensual.
Hashtag consensual.
Yeah, she had an affair with Donald Trump. That's the basis of her whole story. How is that your poster child to hashtag resist? This doesn't make any damn sense.
Mayor Pro Tem John DeMonico held a large gold key in a dark wood box and presented it to Daniels. What did the gay Mayor Pro Tem say to the porn star? DeMonico asked, pausing for applause, pausing for suspense. "Congratulations," he said, handing her the key to the city.
"You slept with the president. Congratulations. Good job."
Daniels responded,
"Thank you.
I'm not really sure what the key opens. I hope it's a wine cellar."
You know what you don't need a key to open?
Her heart?
No.
There were national news crews were drawn to Chi-Chi LaRue's, the Santa Monica Boulevard sex shop, named after the drag queen and director of gay pornography. The people drinking margaritas on the bar patios next door and passersby shouted thanks to Daniels and her attorney, Michael Avenetti. The man in the crowd tried to make eye contact with Avenetti, saying the lawyer was cute. The West Hollywood mayor gave the key to the city outside of Chi-Chi LaRue's. Daniels stood next to a mannequin that was wearing chains and a leather harness around his groin and a poster of herself in black lingerie.
Wait, what?
Huh?
Yeah, I'm just painting the picture. I'm just painting the picture here.
Please stop.
In her less than 2 minutes of remarks, she said that she was a woman with two wonderful gay dads, and she felt especially welcome in West Hollywood. "I am elated and honored," she said to Cheers. "Thank you to everybody She was quickly shuffled back to Chi Chi LaRue's. A Britney song started blaring in the bar next door. I have no idea what the song was. The whole ceremony lasted about 10 minutes. While the atmosphere was festive, Drew, Sam, Lisa Belisanti, a city spokesperson, said West Hollywood was serious as a heart attack about its recognition of Daniels. If it takes someone like Stormy Daniels to bring this corrupt, morally bankrupt Trump administration down, then she really is a hero.
Is that what they think is going to happen?
Apparently.
They think that Stormy Daniels is going to take down the president.
I do not know how.
I don't either.
Because she did not hashtag resist.
She's their hero. It's like, yay, yay, go you. You have terrible judgment. Yay.
By the way, this is a really good opportunity to point out this argument of morally bankrupt, right? Okay. Just want to throw this out there. Okay. So this is West Hollywood. Okay. I just laid out the details.
Go down, not take down.
This whole article, I laid out the details of what took place there, right? They say that Trump is morally bankrupt. Can we please have a poll of Americans? We'll just say American, right? About West Hollywood and their opinions of how West Hollywood's morals are.
Right.
I'd like to see the comparison of the majority of individuals and their views of morality as it relates to West Hollywood. Which it tells you all you need to know about this argument of morality and morally and being morally bankrupt. It goes further here, real quick. Mayor John Duran, in an interview with West Hollywood, said he was inspired by Daniels, whom he called a modern day Lady Godiva.
What is this world that we're living in?
Oh, it is insane. When you run through, and we don't have time right now, when you run through what West Hollywood has done in the wake of the Trump presidency, you want to talk about a city council to cover? The resolutions that this city council has called ever since President Trump has won the election, it's insane. Like, it's like they spend their whole time just passing resolutions against the presidency in West Hollywood. Like they're going to somehow determine the outcome of this presidency. It is bizarro world.
It's just so self-important. You know, it's just so just like we are the center of our own little universe and nothing that happens outside of here matters.
651-989-5855. Coming up out of the Star Tribune. New York Senator Gillibrand says she couldn't stay silent about Franken's misconduct, defending her decision at a forum on women in politics. She had to say something, Drew.
I'm glad she did.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew along with Sam. Star Tribune, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who was the first of Al Franken's Democratic colleagues to call for his resignation late last year, amid mounting accusations of improper behavior towards women, defended her decision to do so at a forum Tuesday night on women in politics. She said publicly asking for Franken to resign was a very hard and difficult thing because, yes, he is our friend.
Mm-hmm.
We admire him. Mm-hmm. We thought he did a great job as senator.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly on the Judiciary Committee.
Oh, yeah. But normally, we just simply don't care if people on our side are sexual abusers.
But with 8 credible allegations of groping and harassment, staying silent was not an option for me anymore. And each time I stayed silent and said nothing, each time I did not stand up and say it's not okay, just enough was enough.
Only on the left does someone like Kirsten Gillibrand have to go out and publicly defend herself for calling out a sexual abuser,
mm-hmm.
for calling out somebody who engaged in the type of behavior that Al Franken engaged in.
Yeah.
She catches a lot of heat, too. I mean, still to this day,
yeah,
she's still catching a lot of heat from people on the left who think that because Al Franken thought the right way, had the right opinions, said the right things when it came to things like Donald Trump, that we should just overlooked it. It's okay when it happens on our side because our people are good and righteous.
Well, and she set the standard. You know, we talked about that when the Al Franken thing emerged in the wake of of Harvey Weinstein, that, you know, how was this going to play out? Because depending on the how the Al Franken situation went down, there was potential for it to set the tone about how other accusations would end up playing out, and how, what the response would be, and how much people would be held responsible. You know, you sort of take that line of thinking and apply it to what happened with Tomi Lahren here, yeah, here in town, right?
Right.
And I think that's partly the reason why you don't have the left coming out and condemning the actions of the individual that threw water on her. I think a lot of it has to do with the circumstances of the situation, okay? Because it was a, relatively speaking, benign event that took place, I feel like it's providing people like Mike Mullen and the City Pages, other individuals on Twitter who have commented on it, because of the benign nature of what took place, it's providing them the opportunity to continue to try to justify, you know, that assault against Tomi Lahren, right? And nobody wants to be the Kirsten Gillibrand of the situation, because nobody wants to be the one that sets the standard of actually doing the right thing. She was right in doing that.
Oh, yeah, she did the right thing.
Yeah, she did the right thing and does not have to explain herself to anybody. Yeah. But you're right. The heat she takes puts her in that position.
And it shouldn't have been a hard decision.
Right.
I mean, she says it was, and I understand that, but it shouldn't have been. It should not have been a hard decision at all. When somebody is a, you know, sexual abuser, when somebody's a groper, when somebody's a serial groper like Al Franken, and you get all these credible accusations, just because they're on your side, just because they happen to agree with you or you happen to agree with them, that should not make it a hard decision.
Right.
That type of behavior is unacceptable, and there should be consequences for it. It's that simple.
Yeah. And that's why it's so, when you look at that, going back to that Tomi Lahren situation, yeah, that's what makes that so unfortunate, because that should be something that everybody can get on board with and should be able to universally, regardless of political party, say you just can't do that to people.
It should not be difficult to condemn throwing a drink on somebody who's just minding their own business, enjoying a lunch. Doesn't matter what you think of that person. That behavior should not be hard to condemn. But what do we get from those on the left, you know, in this town when it happens to Tomi Lahren? If it ain't laughter and celebrating it and mocking it, it's pure quiet.
Yep.
Pure crickets. I'm still embarrassed that the mayor of Minneapolis hasn't come out and apologized for this happening to someone who was visiting his city.
Yeah, I haven't seen a single comment from, I mean, and again, you it's easy to go and put it down on party lines, right? Left versus right. But I haven't seen anybody who is from the left,
yeah,
making a comment condemning it. All that except for Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin.
That's been the only person that from the left
who has commented on this.
Right.
You can despise Tomi Lahren if you want. I don't care. I don't care what you think of Tomi Lahren. But you shouldn't have to. She should not have to suffer from a physical assault like this when she's just out enjoying a meal, just because someone disagrees with her. And she shouldn't have it posted all over the internet and celebrated and laughed at. You know, that's disgusting. That is disgusting behavior.
And it was pathetic of the City Pages to follow up the disgusting comments of Mike Mullen today with an article continuing to cover how much attention it's getting, but then to just fill the article up with people who were basically defending the actions of the individual who assaulted Tomi Lahren. And it's gross and cowardly.
Yeah, Mike Mullen is a garbage human.
With that, out of Channel 5. NFL to fine clubs discipline players who don't stand on the field for the anthem. Now, Star Tribune had a follow-up.
This is better than the original idea that I saw floated around that.
What was the original idea?
They were going to give them like a 15-yard penalty.
Oh, yeah.
That was a dumb idea. That was a really dumb idea.
Well, the NFL can oppose their policies and all, but I'm fine with that. Mike Zimmer came out yesterday. Says not much is expected to change with the Vikings, according to the head coach. I was proud of my team last year, Zimmer said Wednesday following an off-season practice in Eagan. They stood for the anthem. I think it's important that we stand for the anthem. I think it's important we represent our country the right way. A lot of people have. I probably shouldn't get on a tangent, right? But a lot of people have died for that flag. That flag represents our country and what we stand for. And I think it's important. I'll stop there. And so the rule tweak, the NFL also put the onus on teams to create their own individual policies. The league will fine teams, not players, if a player doesn't stand for the national anthem. Right. A player could then be fined by his team. So where do you end up landing on this ultimately?
I think it's more bungling of this issue from the NFL. They've not handled this really well. I'm fine with how this has played out, I guess, or at least what the outcome has been, because what they're allowing teams to do is to decide if they're even going to send their team on the field for the national anthem. So the decision that a team is faced with now is, if you're going to send your team out on the field for the national anthem, then they all need to stand. But if you got a bunch of players that are not going to stand or are resisting, you know, standing for the national anthem, then you can choose to keep your team in the clubhouse for the national anthem. It's one or the other. You either go out there and stand, or you just stay in the clubhouse. And I am fine with, I'm tired of politics and sports being mixed.
Right.
So if I'm an NFL owner, if it's my team, I'm like, you know what? We'll stay in the locker room. We were not going to even make this an issue. We'll just stay in the locker room for the national anthem. It doesn't need to happen. It doesn't need to be out there. It's fine either way. I'm tired of this being the focus of NFL broadcast. The networks, your Foxes and your CBSs and everybody, they could not wait for the national anthem. They used to not even be like on TV. They like while the national anthem was going on in a stadium, they'd be in a commercial break or something. But ever since, you know, Colin Kaepernick decided to make it an issue, they can't wait for the national anthem to start so they can get their cameraman up in everybody's face and show the players that are kneeling, because they was so provocative and it was so controversial. The NFL needs to put a pin in this and get this over with, because it may not be directly correlated, but since Colin Kaepernick first decided to take a knee for the national anthem, their ratings are down over 20%.
Yeah.
And they need to figure out how to fix that.
Yeah, that may not be entirely the kneeling situation, but it certainly is a big factor of it. You know, and it was an interesting, I don't want to say experiment, but it was interesting to see the kind of impact that it can have and how people genuinely decided to make a decision to not watch the NFL because of it. And of course, it's everybody's right to go and do so, and I respect that. I hope that I'm cool with the policy. I think the NFL can do what the NFL needs to do, and I think that it's the right move to try to stop this before the next season so we don't go through this nonsense again. I also hope that the outlets covering the games decide to no longer make it an issue. Because what I don't want to see is, if a team decides they're not going to come out, right? They're going to stay in the locker room for the anthem. What I don't want to see is a media follow-up trying to figure out, well, what's the reason why?
Yeah.
Was this a coach's decision? Or were there players that didn't want to, and so therefore they decided that they were going to because a few key players thought they didn't want to do it? I hope that they just decide, the media outlets too, because it's in their best interest to get those ratings back as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do the networks any good to have the NFL's ratings go in the tank, because that's going to end up affecting them as well. So hopefully, do it now. I'm glad the NFL did the announcement now, you know, well before the season starts. And let's try to put it all behind us and just, you know, focus on this thing called the game. Let's just do that. Let's just focus on playing the game.
Yes. Let's get politics out of sports. I'll just extract through. I don't watch the NFL because I want to hear some commentary on the national anthem or the state of the country. I watch the NFL because I want to see a good football game. That's it. Leave it at that.
Receiver Stephon Diggs declined to discuss the NFL's new policy, allowing players to stay in the locker room for the national anthem, other than saying he doesn't want to draw attention to himself. Good. That's absolutely the right thing to do.
That's smart. I think the Vikings have handled this whole thing extremely well.
651-989-5855. Couple of articles. One out of Fox News talking about Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley out of Iowa ripping the struck page redactments amid a mystery text talking about the Obama White House running this alluding to the investigation. Washington Examiner has an article, too. Stephen Halper is obviously a bigger scandal than the media wants to admit. We have a guest that's going to be joining us here in just a moment to get into that.
Yep, Tom Del Beccaro is going to be joining us in the next segment. He's written a bunch of pieces for PoliticalVanguard.com, for Forbes.com. He will be joining us next. Justice. Final segment of your Thursday edition of Justice to Drew is underway. Really looking forward to the roundtable tomorrow. Roundtable Classic. In the House, Representative Nick Zerwas will get his thoughts on the protests that shut down light rail earlier this week. Comedian Brian Miller will be in. We also expect to be joined by Representative Tom Emmer and comedian Martha Kelly, who is headlining at Acme this week. You know her from the great show Baskets. She's also made appearances in many movies, including Spider-Man Homecoming. She's going to join us in studio tomorrow as well. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The swiftness out of the Washington Examiner, the swiftness in, with the, in which the media has brushed aside Stephen Halper's role in the Russian investigation should be a sign that he's certainly more important than they're admitting. Halper was identified by the Daily Caller's Chuck Ross last weekend as the professor who worked in some still unknown capacity to inform the FBI on the Trump campaign in 2016 as part of the agency's probe of the Russian election meddling. Halper met with at least three of then-candidate Trump's campaign advisors, and the records show that he was paid nearly $300,000 by the Defense Department in September of 2016.
Joining us now, Thomas Del Beccaro, author of The Divided Era, contributor to Forbes.com and PoliticalVanguard.com. Good morning, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
So this Stephen Halper story, I assume you've been staying on top of it. Do you agree with this sort of this notion from the Washington Examiner article that we were quoting here, that you know the protestations of the Spygate scandal and the swiftness with which they are trying to brush aside this Stephen Halper story, does that indicate to you that there may be some fire to this smoke?
Yeah, you know, what was it? Shakespeare said, "Me doth think you protest too loud."
Right.
Look, as you know, at politicalvanguard.com, I put together an entire timeline of the Hillary scandal and this scandal, the DOJ, FBI, now Obama administration scandal. And over the last couple of months, a lot of things have come into view. The thought used to be, with the information that was out there, that sometime in July of 2016, the DOJ received information related to Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, and that caused them to want to have an investigation. Now it's becoming really quite clear, because it isn't only Stephen Halper, that what was really going on was early in the year, the DOJ and Comey started a process to create a sense and to maybe plant information from which then they could spy. And this starts very early, and it looks like it has to do with Carter Page. Mm-hmm. Because when Trump was when he was a candidate getting closer to the nomination, he announced that Carter Page was part of his foreign policy team. Now, Carter Page was known to the FBI, the CIA, and the DOJ since 2013, because Carter Page liked to hang out in Moscow. He was a Russophile, wanted to do business there, and they had been tracking him. And what happened was that they realized he wasn't a foreign agent, but then they used him to do surveillance and bring charges against some people. So they knew he was clean. But in March of 2016, what they did was Comey announced, and this is in the timeline at politicalvanguard.com, up the left-hand corner of the website, Comey announced that there's Page information to a group of people, and that's really now the genesis of this. And Halper, the Australian ambassador, and one other party, that approached Michael Cavuto. It looks like a sting operation on the Trump campaign and their excuse to outright spy on American citizens.
Your piece here, I'll tweet out a link to it. It's how biased FBI and DOJ officials broke the law, tried to decide the election, an annotated timeline here. Where do you see this going? Do you think that there's going to be any legitimate and serious investigation into the planting of an FBI informant, and will there be any accountability? Because that's been our frustration on the show, is whether or not, you know, this is true, to what extent it is true. It's frustrating to see sort of half the country and a lot of the mainstream media sort of shrug it off and dismiss it.
Yeah, and sit there and give credence to people like Brennan, who was at the center of this and was apparently running an operation out of the CIA, which is illegal. The CIA is not allowed to be spying on American citizens on American soil and pushing this. So will there be justice? It's an interesting question. This we do know, that Jeff Sessions recused himself, but he did appoint a new prosecutor outside the Beltway, outside of Washington, with very little ties. But also there was the Inspector General's report with regard to McCabe, which established not only that he lied 4 different times, a felony, but other things, other wrongdoings. And now a 400-page Inspector General's report is going to come out on the mishandling of the Hillary investigation. 400 pages is a lot. The McCabe report was like 36 pages, I want to say. This is going to be 400. So if we're going to try and give some leeway or benefit of the doubt to Sessions, it is that he waited for this independent investigator to lay it all out. It gets out to the American public, and then Sessions says, look, here's a guy who independently did this, not politically motivated. He says that there should be charges, therefore there will be. If Sessions doesn't do that, then he needs to go, and Trump needs to find someone who will sit there and do the obvious, because McCabe obviously lied. And if you or I did that to the FBI,
we'd be prosecuted.
They even went after Flynn after the FBI convinced themselves that he didn't lie.
Do you think there's a level here where what we've seen, and we asked this of a guest that we had earlier in the week, our friend of the show, Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty, but do you think that what we've seen and what we're seeing take place, if it's true, okay, if we did have this, you know, this FBI informant, you know, infiltrate the Trump campaign, and a lot of the speculation that we're talking about is really the reality. Do you think that this is something that has actually been going on in previous election campaigns, previous presidential campaigns, and just hasn't seen the light of day because of the fact that the outcome of the election has been different, and it didn't behoove people to go down that road? Because as we've mentioned many times on the show, you know, if Hillary Clinton had won, we wouldn't know about any of this. I mean, there wouldn't be any talk of the Russia collusion narrative. You probably wouldn't be, we wouldn't be having this conversation with you, Tom Del Vaccaro. You'd just be, you know, Hillary would be in office and we'd be dealing with all that nonsense. So I'm just curious your thoughts on whether or not this is something that's been going on for a long, long time, or if this is unique to this particular presidential election.
It is unique in this sense that the past presidential elections, the campaigns kept close eye on each other, to be sure. They went to each other's events. They recorded things, yada, yada. But this is, as someone who writes history books about politics, including the divided era, there's no chance before that the CIA, the FBI and the DOJ coordinated an effort to undermine the opposing party's campaign. This is way beyond the pale. There was not a previous effort to spy domestically, to unmask. And you're right. If Hillary would have won, we wouldn't have had this. Probably wouldn't have had the Me Too movement either, because Harvey Weinstein would be a celebrity in the White House. So, but this is a very important opportunity. I tell people, you know, the Fourth Amendment occurred because under the English and King George, he would issue a writ naming a person, and then the English authorities here just could investigate that person and do just about anything they wanted to them. So we came up with the Fourth Amendment saying you're not allowed to do this unless you know a specific crime and have probable cause. Well, I'll say it on your radio show, I've said it on many others. All of what Mueller has done under the Rod Rosenstein referral lacks a specific crime, and therefore all of it is potentially to be overturned. And they gave him powers that they were not allowed to give. Only a president could give that.
Right.
So this needs to be followed through, and we all need to care about Paul Manafort, who may well have been guilty of doing some things like not reporting income. But Paul Manafort's the one with the money who can take this all the way to the Supreme Court and get all of this thrown out.
We're talking with Thomas Del Beccaro. He's the author of The Divided Era. We got a little bit of breaking news. I'm going to shift gears on you here, but I want to keep you on the line because I want to get your reaction to this. The president, President Trump, has just canceled the summit with Kim Jong-un with North Korea. They released a letter just a few moments ago, and I'll read the beginning of it here, directed to Kim Jong-un. It says, Dear Mr. Chairman, we greatly appreciate your time, patience, and effort with respect to our recent negotiations and discussions relative to a summit long sought by both parties, which was scheduled to take place on June 12 in Singapore. We were informed that the meeting was requested by North Korea, but that to us is totally irrelevant. I was very much looking forward to being there with you. Sadly, based on the tremendous anger and open hostility displayed in your most recent statement, I feel it is inappropriate at this time to have this long-planned meeting. Therefore, please let this letter serve to represent that the Singapore summit, for the good of both parties, but to the detriment of the world, will not take place. You talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and powerful that I pray to God they will never have to be used. This is a letter that was sent from the White House to Kim Jong-un. He goes on to say, I felt a wonderful dialogue was building up between you and me, and ultimately it is only that dialogue that matters. Someday, I look very much forward to meeting you. In the meantime, I want to thank you for the release of the hostages who are now home with their families. That was a beautiful gesture and very much appreciated. If you change your mind having to do with this most important summit, please do not hesitate to call me or write. The world, and North Korea in particular, has lost a great opportunity for lasting peace and great prosperity and wealth. This missed opportunity is truly a sad moment in history. Again, that was a letter directly from Donald Trump, signed by Donald Trump to His Excellency Kim Jong-un, that was released just a moment ago. White House officially calling an end to the idea that there will be a June 12th summit between North Korea and the United States. Tom Del Beccaro, your thoughts on this breaking news?
Keep in mind that the U.S. has five major foreign policy concerns: Russia, China, ISIS, Iran, and North Korea. If North Korea had come off the map and had joined the civilized world in a productive way, it would have been the largest foreign policy story since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And so it was always going to be an incredibly tricky and difficult process because of how unpredictable the North Korean regimes have been. Having said all that, this is not the end of anything. Kim Jong, and honestly what happened in some respects is that the major media got out in front of this, said a lot of things. You can't negotiate with someone like this. America can't in the news. And so it was moving so fast in people's eyes, talk of Nobel Prizes and all of that. He lost faith in front of his most important constituency, which is his intelligence and military services. And so, but it's not over. This is going to be a long dance, and it's going to take a long time to bring this country in out of the cold. And I hope the process continues behind the scenes and that the American press, the major media, stays away from this, because honestly, I don't think they want, obviously, Trump to succeed on this. But they need to stay away from it for the benefit of the whole world.
Well, and this really, to me, speaks to, you know, Donald Trump in doing his, you know, we talk about it a lot in jest, but I do mean it seriously, kind of the art of the deal. We had the report earlier this morning about the North Korean official who was calling names to Vice President Pence today. And we made, you know, a lot of comments about how you get situations where you have an official within North Korea and they're trying to keep their standing with the people in North Korea. That might not necessarily be the view or opinion of Kim Jong-un as they work towards this summit. This move could also be sort of, hey, you know what? This is our way of showing as we're moving forward, you better have everybody on board on your side. You know, if you're going to have officials within the North Korean government making these comments about our leaders, how can you expect that we're going to move forward in good faith? This seems like it could be one of those. I don't want to calling bluff, you know, is sort of the crass way to say it. But it could be just a move of, hey, we have a standard moving forward. And if you want to continue to talk, then you need to rise up to that standard and need to get on board with everybody, not just Kim Jong-un in our direct conversations.
No question about it. There is this now very delicate dance. From North Korea's perspective, it looked like he was giving up everything and not getting anything that people could publicly see. So it could well have been that he says, that's problematic from my point of view, therefore I'm going to pull back. This is the problem with negotiations of this magnitude in the public eye. You remember back the negotiation related to the termination of the Vietnam War occurred in Paris and behind the scenes, and the world barely knew about it. My point again is trying to do.
Sounds like we're losing your connection there. I'm going to go ahead and let you go because we are almost out of time as well. Thomas Del Beccaro, thank you so much for your time this morning. It was a good conversation. Again, that is the author of The Divided Era. You can read his writings at politicalvanguard.com and at forbes.com. He's a regular contributor there as well.
You know, and I think it needs to be said, and we'll get into it certainly more into it on tomorrow's show, but it needs to be said, too, that, you know, if this is the Trump administration, and it seems that way, sort of, you know, setting their own red line on this, you know, we shouldn't have to move forward in this deal with North Korea and then also have to take those comments coming out of North Korean officials against our vice president, just as an example, right? Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have to be like, well, let's brush those aside for the sake of getting this historic thing done. If this is sort of trying to set the standard of how we're going to do this, then good on the president. And we'll certainly get into it more on tomorrow's show.
Yeah, there'll be a lot more news on this later throughout the day as well. We'll dig into it tomorrow with the Friday Roundtable. Representative Nick Zerwas, comedian Brian Miller in tomorrow, your world-famous parody song contest as well. We are expecting to have our regular Friday check-in with Representative Tom Emmer.
Yeah, full spoilers for Solo.
No.
Oh, sorry.
There will be no Solo spoilers tomorrow, but there will be another comedian, Martha Kelly, who's headlining at Acme this weekend. She's going to join us as well. Good job, team.
Good job today, everybody.
Good job, Sam. I don't give me integration. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Thanks, Alice.
I won't equal opportunity to live tomorrow. I'm Chris Addison. Here's